Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's Casual Friday. That means Monday is Casual Monday, Tuesday, Casual Tuesday, Wednesday, Casual Hump Day, Thursday, Casual Thurs, that's what we call it, and Friday, Casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 18th, 2018. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, from the Uber blog Hullabaloo, Digby, or Heather Pardon will be here with us. I guess maybe and. She's both, Digby and Heather Pardon. Also on the program today, you know him as... Shoot, I can't remember the name of that character on Bob's Burgers.
Teddy.
No, I was going to... Teddy is the obvious one, but I was going to say Edith. But he's also Teddy. Larry Murphy will be here, jumping off the texting into your ears, ladies and gentlemen. Meanwhile, Santa Fe shooting at a high school, 8 dead, Santa Fe, Texas, I should say. It's outside of Houston, 8 dead as of about an hour ago. Could be more. Just another day in America, I guess. Meanwhile, across the country, the question is now being asked, are Dems blowing 2018? Meanwhile, along those same lines, torture czar Gina Haspel confirmed the food stamp cutting farm bill held hostage by the Freedom Caucus so that they can also shut the door on immigrants. Manafort's son-in-law turns, and Cohen's FinCEN records are now restricted. Meanwhile, that racist lawyer that everybody's been talking about has had the worst 24 hours of his life. Democrats in the Senate win a symbolic vote against net neutrality. Meanwhile, the Trump administration cuts funding to any clinic that refers or provides abortions. Jeff Sessions ends administrative closure, possibly deporting up to 350,000 people who are eligible to stay in the U.S. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Casual Friday, another insane week. A lot of stuff happening that's sort of very difficult in my mind to parse in terms of all this Russia stuff. And next week on the program, we're going to have Marcy Wheeler come in and basically separate the wheat from the chaff. The wheat from the chaff. So we'll have a notion of what's actually going on. But
separate the HPV from the HIV.
There,
gotta do it. It's medicine.
Don't tip the sound, Cliffs, Matt.
Matt's really into this one. I walked in today. He's just like, Mike, gotta watch this.
You gotta talk into your microphone. Is that right? It's a big difference.
How's this?
That's there significantly different. We're not working with those other crappy mics anymore. You're gonna go right into the mic.
Nice.
We'll get to this question about Democrats blowing it in 2018. The answer is not exactly what you would expect. But this question of these, and I guess this broke on Wednesday, and so I didn't have a chance to comment on yesterday. Michael was here. I assume maybe it came up. But Michael Cohen's SARS reports These are the suspicious activities reports that are issued by banks. They go into a database, the Treasury Department, and specifically FinCEN. I think it stands for Financial... it's basically the cops, the financial cops associated with Treasury. And I think at the time, maybe in December or November, maybe this was maybe a year ago, actually, I had noted that Jeff Hauser over at the, can't remember quite what outfit he's working at, but it's a government corruption think tank where they study this stuff, had noted that Mnuchin had replaced the head of FinCEN with a crony, and said there was a lot of reasons why he might do this, but none of them are good. And so we still don't know what is going on with that, but clearly somebody wanted to avoid the opportunity for people to see that Michael Cohen had some SARS reports in there. But we will talk more about that as it goes on. In the meantime, apparently Donald Trump, I mean, I don't know what amazes me more about this clip, that Donald Trump is asking, you know, I mean, I guess Bill Gates is not a random person, but he's a fairly random person to ask about health questions. And now with that said, I guess there was a conversation about vaccines, and sadly, Bill Gates notes that Bobby Kennedy had met with Trump at one point and was talking to him about vaccines. This is a point where Bobby Kennedy and I have, you know, disagreed back in the day when we were both on Ring of Fire Radio, and we talked about it at that point. But here is Bill Gates just talking about how stupid Donald Trump is. I mean, I really don't know how to put this in any other way except for to say that the first level takeaway from this is that Donald Trump is an idiot. The second level takeaway is that he's probably been diagnosed with HPV and doesn't really know what to do about it.
What?
Then the second time I saw him was the March after that, so March 2017 in the White House. In both of those two meetings, he asked me if vaccines weren't a bad thing because he was considering a commission to look into ill effects of vaccines. And somebody, his name is Robert Kennedy Jr., was advising him that vaccines were causing bad things. And I said, no, that's a dead end. That would be a bad thing. Don't do that. Both times he wanted to know if there was a difference between HIV and HPV. So I was able to explain that those are rarely confused with each other.
A lot of people don't know.
Well, there's a couple of things. There's a couple of takeaways here. One is Bill Gates really not interested in getting invited back to the White House. The other thing is that despite the fact that Donald Trump is a complete idiot, he's an idiot twice over. Because, I mean, if you have to ask that question twice, like if it's necessary for you to bring up that question one time, is there a difference between HPV and HIV, right? One is the human papilloma virus, which is asymptomatic in most people until women get cervical cancer from it. Not all every woman. I think it raises the chances of women getting cervical cancer to by 20 or 30%, I believe. I'm not exactly sure off the top of my head. But it is now, and it was quite controversial during the Bush administration as to whether or not this vaccine would be put on the schedule for vaccinations, particularly for girls age 12 to 15 or so, sometimes younger, because the far right in this country, the religious folk, felt that it was encouraging these girls to have sex, to have a premarital sex. If you were going to vaccinate them from the HPV, then they'll be more encouraged, apparently, to have sex. because they know they can get away with not having cervical cancer or something, which, of course, is the number one reason why people have sex. So that because you know you can't get cervical cancer from it. But the idea that he has to ask him twice, doesn't remember the first time.
Just making sure.
Double checking to see if it changed.
You were sure. You heard me say HPV and HIV, right? You heard the question clearly. I just want to make sure.
I'm just because it's very important to be scientifically precise.
Gotta be. Gotta
I can tell like, the next time there's some like kids from like a middle school who had a science fair at the White House, what they'll be hearing about.
My friend.
A lot of people don't know. A lot of people don't know. There's a difference.
Guess what, guys? HPV turns out not the same thing as HIV.
Bet you didn't know that. Oh, that's a cool volcano. Great work. Great work.
All right. What, let's. I Melania guess we don't have time was lying for all to the me. Schlossberg. This guy has had a. Well, let's do one of them. Okay. It turns out that there is that lawyer who was caught on videotape demanding that everyone in the salad place that he was going to in downtown New York. He was enraged that people were speaking Spanish to each other and that some of the people who worked there were speaking Spanish. And he threatened to call ICE on them, arguing that they must be undocumented. None of those people seemed to be terribly concerned about it. So I suspect they were not. But nevertheless, I mean, regardless, he was incensed that there was that they were speaking Spanish when this was America and he wants them to speak English. And it turns out that was just one of multiple incidents that this guy has been caught on videotape. The first is, and who is this guy? He's a vlogger, right? What's his name?
Willie Morris.
Willie Morris. He's a vlogger. Apparently he's from Boston, or I think from Boston. And he was walking down the street, and he does like a daily vlog. And it just so happens that he had this experience in New York, and so he bumped his normal vlog for this thing. And here he is explaining what happened. He's walking down Fifth Avenue, and at night.
October 2016.
And here, listen to this.
And then he just starts cussing at me. Let me, before I go any further, let me show you the video.
Oh, what country are you from?
Who are you?
I'm gonna call the police. You don't run into people. I'm a citizen here. You're not. You're an ugly foreigner. So fuck you.
Pause it for 1 second. Fifth Avenue at this point is one of the widest, has one of the widest sidewalks in the entire city of New York. It is, I don't even know, is it 30 feet wide? 25 feet wide. You can see how sparse it is. The guy, the vlogger, says, like, I was walking down the street and I'm talking to somebody, and we're on the outside closest to the road, and he makes a beeline towards me, puts up his briefcase, and sort of shoves it right into me. And I guess the vlogger at one point realized, like, you know, you're in that vlogger mindset. You pull out your phone and you start videotaping the guy. And the guy's like, I'm going to call the cops on you because you're an effing foreigner. Presumably, he just thought, he assumed he was a foreigner from his look because the guy's just some dude from Boston. But let's listen.
You're not. You're an ugly foreigner. Yeah. So you.
I don't know this guy at all.
Okay. Not that I'm
I don't know this guy at all.
I'm going to get a quick picture.
Don't worry, dude. I've got you on video.
Not allowed to walk on the wrong side of the
this
street.
This guy literally just ran into me. And is going crazy.
I thought he was a friend of yours.
I thought he was a friend of yours.
Absolutely insane, right?
Okay, that's it. So,
and wrong side of the street? Did he say that?
Yes, yes.
What? Wow, okay.
And
I think it's pretty obvious what's going on there, though.
Well, I think the guy resented the fact that he saw this guy he presumed was a foreigner walking down the street with this blonde, you know, sort of like California-looking woman, I guess.
I'd be home furiously masturbating tonight, and this Mexican has a blonde.
Honestly, I have a feeling that we're going to see some, like, incel stuff come up with this dude later or something. But there's more.
Incel
there's
at law.
More footage of this guy. I mean, I have to say that I felt some sympathy for him when I saw a clip of him, you know, sort of getting harassed by reporters on the street. And he was running around and he was calling on his phone like, someone, please help me. But as these other videos come out, you start to say, like, well, you know what? Maybe this is a long time coming, right? Like, maybe the thing in the lunch place was just like, he was off his medication that day, or he just found out that something, you know, somebody in his family is very ill, and, you know, okay. He's been publicly humiliated. He's also incidentally lost his law offices, like the physical offices. The company that was renting to him won't rent to him anymore. But when you see the other videos, which we will play later,
this is
in the
problem
program,
with not having a big social safety net. This is what he's about to discover.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if he supported the policies we support, he could lose all of this, but still have health care and housing. And
I was going to say, maybe he does, but I'm quite sure he doesn't. But here's the other problem that he has, and it's a classic one. When they first came for the immigrants, I said nothing. And once they come up for the lawyers who are racist, there's nobody left to defend him. That's the problem that he has. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Digby. We are back, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. On the phone, ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure to welcome to the program Heather Parton, or as you may know her from her Uber blog, Hullabaloo Digby. Hello, Heather.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
I'm okay. And now, Heather, yeah, I should also say you write at Salon, and you wrote at Salon this week, one of the pieces that you wrote was about something that we talked about earlier in the week, which to me feels like if this had happened in any other administration, it would be a 6 month, maybe an 18 month story, right? I mean, there would be 100 investigations, as there should be, to the relationship between Donald Trump and this Indonesian, resort. And complex, and the Chinese investment of about $1 billion into it, in one form or another, sanctioned, if not actually directly provided by the Chinese government. And his follow-up that the restrictions on this Chinese telecom company be lifted. This is a company that is basically has had to go out of business because the Commerce Department shut it down for violating multiple embargoes, including the Iran and North Korea embargoes. And the national security folks say, oh, yeah, this stuff, this company is basically used to to put information in our phones that allow the Chinese to eavesdrop on them, right? I mean, this is, it's all there in one story, including Trump's tweets. Like, it's got everything. It's sort of the perfect modern corruption story. And, you know, it was off the news in about 12 hours.
Oh, I know. I mean, imagine if, I mean, you know, this is really a trope that should be retired, but we can't possibly do it. Imagine if someone else had done this, what would have happened? I mean, just think about the years of Benghazi hearings, for instance. It's a good example. You know, this is nuts, and it's actually indicative of a much, much bigger story about Trump. And the fact that, you know, that to me, I mean, all the stuff about Russia is important. I'm not one to downplay that. I think people should talk about it. I think it's important. I think it may be, you know, one of the most significant scandals, you know, ever in American politics. However, on a purely political level, what is the most astonishing thing about Donald Trump is the fact that he is 100% corrupt in every way. And this particular story is a perfect illustration of how that can play out in a president and a party that supports him that refuses to do any, that, you know, basically just decides to go for it, and the party and anyone who can hold him accountable says, yeah, you know, fine, whatever you need to do. And that's basically what's happened. This Chinese thing is just one of many. The Trump boys are all over the world following up on, you know, they promised supposedly that they weren't going to do any new foreign deals. Well, there's a whole bunch of existing contracts out there, none of which we know about. I shouldn't say none of them. Some of them we do. The press has uncovered some, but none that the Trump organization has revealed. But one, for instance, was in India. Donald Trump Jr. went over there, was making speeches about, you know, American foreign policy at the same time that he was selling condos and, yeah, and having meetings with top-level Indian politicians and various, you know, wealthy developers. I mean, this is there is no better example of the kind of corruption that was anticipated in the Constitution with this emoluments clause. And I think part of the problem is this stupid word, emoluments. Let's just call it what, you know, it's bribes, basically. We're talking about the President of the United States and his family bribing foreign officials and foreign officials bribing them for favors. And, you know, using the power of the United States government to enrich themselves. That is what they're doing. And they're doing it all over the world. There's a case in Vancouver with a hotel. Down in Panama, they recently had a dispute between one of the Trump resorts there and one of their partners. And the partners wanted to lock out the Trumps. The Trump organization called the Panamanian government and said, you know, hey, you might want to check in here and intervene on our behalf. They didn't do it. But nonetheless, the fact that they thought they could,
right,
is pretty amazing. And, you know, there's other ones. There are a bunch of these deals, these contracts, and many of which we still don't know about. I mean, think about what we're still just finding out this week about Russia and the Trump Tower Russia project that we supposedly had heard ended at the end of 2015. Well, it turns out it went all the way through the Republican convention. They were doing that deal. So there's a bunch of stuff out there we still don't know about or are still finding out about. This corruption story, and that's just the international stuff.
Right.
Think about all the domestic corruption that's going on as well. So, you know, this story is immense. And, you know, the idea that that is not the central argument in this upcoming election, that we have someone who's stealing the country blind, basically, and the Republicans are all in the Congress are refusing to do their jobs, refusing to fulfill their duty, their obligation, their oath of office, whatever it is, to do oversight on this stuff, and basically are now in at the point of actually becoming accomplices to what's going on in the White House. These, you know, Devin Nunes and the House Freedom Caucus people, and covering up for the president. I mean, that is the essential central argument for putting Democrats in charge in the Congress, right? I mean, somebody's got to do something. This has to be stopped. I mean, this is an unbelievable you know, we've turned into a kleptocracy, the real thing. You know, we're no better than, you know, what, Azerbaijan or something, right? I mean, that's what we're turning into.
Well, you know, it's interesting. There are two pieces that came out in the, just the past couple of days. And Sam Stein wrote a piece at the Daily Beast saying that about the reluctance of Democrats to talk about Russia. And Jeff Hauser, who I mentioned earlier in the program today, wrote a piece that along the lines of what you're talking about, but that the Democrats are really failing to tie in the Trump corruption as a predicate for what they were going to do. I mean, the funny thing is, right, is that the critique that one would have anticipated someone like myself would be expressing towards the Democrats at this point heading into the 2018 cycle is that you have to offer a positive agenda. That seems to be the only thing that they're doing. That they the if you ask any of the Democrats, you know, and we barely see them on TV, of course, but if you go up, I mean, in Sam Stein's piece, the first thing is citing Amy Klobuchar in Minnesota, offering an observation on the temperament of the current electorate. They're not asking me about Russian bots, she said of her voters. They're asking me about soybean exports. If you go and look at Nancy Pelosi recently said, according to Jeff Hauser, I don't advocate for people talking about Donald Trump. It's about a more positive agenda, better jobs, better pay, better future. Deval Patrick in the same piece. We need to focus less on what's wrong with Trump and the Republicans and more on what's right with us. And in some way, it's like the Democrats don't have the ability to that everything is binary with them, right? Like they can't, there's no nuance to this whatsoever, that you can't, because you cannot get on television now unless you're willing to talk about Trump, which makes sense on some level. He's a really big story, for better or for worse. And you can easily tie in all of this sort of corruption into problems that Americans are experiencing, right? I mean, and on top of like all the things that the Trump administration is doing that is also really bad from a policy standpoint, it seems to me.
Of course. I mean, look, why are the Democrats acting like they're on the defensive? I don't understand this. You know, Trump's got, you know, at best a 40% approval rating. The Republicans are in the dirt. Why are they walking around acting like, well, we've got to offer a positive agenda because, you know, people don't know what we stand for? Who cares? I mean, this is a midterm election, number one, which means, of course, what you're pushing is turnout of your base, right? I mean, everybody knows that that's the dynamic that happens, you know, on the off years. And the idea that you can't tie in everything you believe in on a positive level by contrasting that with the, you know, the devil, with the, you know, the person that the Democratic base is absolute. I mean, we're talking an intensity of loathing for this guy that is so overwhelming that if you can't weaponize that politically and get people out to the polls on that basis, and use that as the, you know, the sort of jumping off point for how, you know, what he's doing in contrast to what you're doing or what I was talking about. Just the fact that, look, we've got to have some oversight of this government. It's gone crazy. They're selling out the country. There's, you know, the corruption from top to bottom. There's Scott Pruitt. The entire executive branch is a cesspool of corruption, and nobody's overseeing it. We can't get anybody to do it. Devin Nunes is running around, you know, at midnight trying to help out the White House instead of doing his job. I mean, there are many ways that you can frame this thing that takes advantage of this intensity of, you know, fear, loathing, you know, antipathy, whatever you want to call it, around Trump and what is happening, that I honestly am absolutely stymied as to why the Democrats are taking this. Now, I assume they've done focus groups and polling, which shows that people want to hear a positive agenda. Well, people always say that. People, of course, you know, we want people to work together. We want bipartisanship. There's a lot of things people say. But good politicians, it seems to me, should be able to understand the zeitgeist and get that this election is truly, I mean, for one thing, it really is critical. It's critical that there is some oversight. I mean, this isn't just, I'm not just talking about this as a, you know, as a political strategy. I mean, this on a very, you know, basic level, there needs to be some kind of counterpoint to what Trump is doing. I mean, that should be, go without saying, I would hope, to Democrats all over the country, including those in Washington. But, you know, just on a sheer just kind of political level, it seems obvious to me. And remember, Sam, the last time the Democrats won a midterm, they don't win very many of them, by the way, because, you know, of this stuff like this. But in 2006, they had a slogan called A Culture of Corruption.
Yep.
And that's what they ran on. And they won big. Now, you know, you can attribute that to all kinds of things. But let's just say that, you know, maybe they should just pull dust off that old playbook and try it out again, because it's the last time it worked. They've been running on their positive agenda in midterms ever since 2010. And, you know, how'd that work out for them? Have we looked at the numbers in the Congress? Because it didn't work out very well.
Well, part of the problem here is also just from a media strategy standpoint. I mean, my understanding is that there's a lot of Democrats who are afraid to go on like MSNBC because they don't want to be dragged into the Trump thing. Now, that seems to me to be stupid, right? You need to just have some type of skill. Like, yes, Donald Trump is horrible. He's clearly corrupt. If you want to say, like, he's, he's in bed with the Russians, but the real problem is he's selling Americans down the, you know,
exactly,
down the tubes. He's,
how hard is that?
I mean, Jeff Hauser gives some good examples here. Is Trump benefiting from a tax bill that threatens Medicare, increases health care premiums, leaves 13 million families without health coverage to pay for tax breaks for Trump? Yes. Is Trump hiding his personal tax returns while hiring alumni of Goldman Sachs to write tax bill, giving his family and donors and business partners a staggering tax cut? Yes. He's putting a tax avoidance expert to run the IRS while Robert Mercer, you know, owes $7 billion to the IRS. You can go on and on with these stories, he writes, and it's true. There is, he said, you know, and he quotes Chuck Schumer, contrasting the idea of just running against Trump with Democrats' need to, quote, put together a strong, cohesive economic group of proposals aimed at the middle class and those struggling to get there. There is a certain myopia, and it's also a certain amount of sort of like four corners in basketball, or at least at college basketball. I think they still have the shot clock, or they don't have a shot clock for at least most of the game, where it's, you know, you get so far ahead, you're just like, we're just gonna keep the ball out of play. And it seems to me to be, at the very least, a missed opportunity. At worst, a blown opportunity, right? Like, this is not a slam dunk. I mean, we're seeing at least Democrats do very well in these special elections, but the special elections, you get a little bit more, you have an advantage if you have a deeper commitment, not necessarily a wider commitment in terms of voting. I mean, it has to be wider, of course, because you got to get more people to the polls who are going to vote, but it's hard to know whether or not there's a drop off after that. And this is the problem. And you combine that with the gerrymandering, you know, Democrats need to go out and they need to win by 11 percentage points, I think, to really, gain a significant advantage or majority, at least in the House. I mean, the Senate, who knows? But, you know, you look at this Gina Haspel thing and it's really problematic. We had five Democrats vote for Gina Haspel: Manchin, Heitkamp, Joe Donnelly, Bill Nelson of Florida, which is scary because it leads me to believe that he's afraid. Mark Warner, Gene Jaheen of New Hampshire. This is a bad sign, it seems to me. It means that they are feeling vulnerable, which of course some of them obviously should be. But it also suggests that they think they can rope-a-dope it in a way, rather than going out and actually fighting against this, right?
Well, that's what it sounds like to me, and I think that is extremely short-sighted. I mean, as you say, there's a structural impediment that exists for Democrats to win due to gerrymandering and, you know, the fact that 6 years up, it comes, you know, more Democrats are up for re-election than Republicans. So, you know, they already have a disadvantage going into it. And I think that most people thought before the Trump phenomenon that the Democrats probably wouldn't be able to do it. It's Trump, and that, you know, the shock and horror of his election and then administration that's actually making it possible for them to win the potentially win the House and possibly win the Senate, too. I mean, I don't think that's off the table. And the fact that they're being cautious in this moment just strikes me as bizarre. I mean, if you're not going to go for it at a time when people are anticipating the possibility of a wave, when do you go for it? And I guess you don't ever. I mean, that just seems to be the Democratic position. Now, to me, you know, one of the things that I truly just I will never understand about this is the idea that they somehow think that all these people in the Democratic Party and, you know, on the left in general, whether they're Democrats or Greens, Independents, whatever, they've been taken to the streets in massive numbers. I mean, that is absolutely true. They've done it they've gathered in groups now, the Indivisible and in various, you know, electoral groups around the country to organize, run for office, do all kinds of political activity that they had not been involved in before. These are, many of them are new people who'd never done it before. They're organizing around massive mass social movements like, you know, the Black Lives Matter and gun safety. And, you know, they're doing everything that citizens can possibly do to send a signal that they are unhappy with the way things are going and they want something to change, right? I mean, this is the Democrats doing that. If they're not running around in tri-corner hats like the Tea Party, this is Democrats, and they're doing it very systematically. They're doing it with a lot of energy and a lot of intensity. And the party is looking at them going, we don't see you. Basically, we're going to run the same race that we were going to run back in 2016. We're going to talk about, you know, our issues, and we're going to issue some 10-point plans, and we're going to pretend like none of this is happening. I mean, I find that to be somewhat delusional. And for the, you know, I think a lot of voters are sitting around going, you know, we're yearning for some political leadership here, right? Somebody to oppose Trump. And then you've got something like this Gina Haspel thing come along. Where you're going, are you kidding? You're kidding. You're actually going to give him a big win here. I mean, if nothing else, give him a win. And even, of course, on the substance, more importantly, you're going to confirm a torturer to run the CIA. That's what the Democrats are sitting here watching happening, and they're watching Democratic politicians do it. I mean, that is, to me, it's they're not, they are, you know, you want to talk about being out of touch. They're out of touch. They're not seeing what's going on. There is a tremendous amount of energy and intensity among their own voters that they're basically saying, "Yeah, whatever. That's nice. Get out and vote, but you know, we're not really going to address any of that."
Do you think this is just a what I know this is, we've had this conversation. We had this conversation about Democrats for an extended period of time, mm-hmm. in terms of sort of their anemia when it comes to politics. But how much of this is a function of just like Chuck Schumer not being good at his job?
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, that quote that you just gave, the one from Hauser's article about Schumer, you know, saying we really need to, you know, talk about our positive agenda. That tells me that he's not very good at his job. I think they are still generally convinced, number one, that the country is conservative, and, you know, despite the polls, despite what they're seeing in the streets, despite their own voters, you know, looking them in the face, they still believe this, that the country's really conservative. And if they, you know, if they become too, and it's not really even on a policy level, right? Because we're seeing them actually move left on a lot of economic issues.
Right.
I mean, we're seeing real movement in that, which is great news. I mean, I'm not going to, you know, say that that's not a good thing. But on a political level, they're just, it's always this, don't make trouble. You know, don't get too out there. They're going to say you're hysterical. You know, you can't really, you don't really go for it. Now, you know, the other side, of course, has gone, you know, way off in the opposite direction. But, you know, this is the political world we're living in. And it just seems to me, I look at these people and I feel like they're not seeing what I see, that they are in a completely, you know, different, you know, kind of alternate universe of politics, that they are either living in the past or living in some projected future, but they're not living in the now. They are not actually addressing what's happening in with any real, you know, viability, as far as I can tell.
I think there's a tendency for people to live in the past. I mean, I know that I feel, on some level, I can often find myself sort of, my assumption of how things will go down is, you know, the way that I perceive them, like during the Bush years. And in some instances, it's informative, and others less so, because the country and the electorate is always changing, right? I mean, and I just get the sense that, well, I think Chuck Schumer is bad at his job, and I think part of the reason why he's bad at his job is he doesn't have a sense of what the tolerance for confrontation is, where you can leverage the Trump stuff. I mean, it's almost as if they're, you know, overhearing some of the criticism, it seems to me, which is, you know, don't just focus on Trump, provide, you know, some positive agenda. Well, yeah, that's a good idea, but that doesn't mean don't mention Trump. That doesn't mean don't leverage Trump as a means in which to sell that agenda. And they for whatever reason, they won't do it. And, you know, meanwhile, and I want to just shift to this, less, I guess, you know, political, capital P story, is we've got a farm bill, which is, imposes work rules, stricter work rules on adults for food stamp, you know, nutritional assistance. We're talking about a program that provides an average of $125 whole dollars per month to help 42 million Americans get food. And the implication that there's definitely jobs out there. So if you don't have a job, you got to go out there and get a job, is obviously ridiculous. It is, the bill goes on to, provide, like I say, the stricter work requirements for the bill. It also goes on to gut the school kids nutrition program, which I guess was really annoying because Michelle Obama was involved in promoting it in some fashion. And so that's bad, despite the fact that it's clearly improving child nutrition across the country. We've got California and other states that have attempted to legislate specifics about their some of their produce, or I should say their you know, livestock. In this case, it's eggs. California has basically said you can't factory farm your eggs and sell them in California. They're going to roll that back because of states' rights, of course. There's other programs, but this farm bill is a disaster. And yet we now have the Freedom Caucus just voting it down, all the Dems. This just happened just moments ago, actually. So the farm bill went down 198 to 213. Democrats voted against the farm bill because of what we've just mentioned. And the Freedom Caucus Also voted against it. 30 Republicans voted no. No Democrats voted yes, because they want an immigration vote from Paul Ryan and to impose further sort of draconian measures against immigrants. You know, this is all real and horrible stuff that's going on. And they're ultimately going to get both their farm bill that cuts this stuff, and they're going to get their vote on this immigration stuff. And maybe, I mean, hopefully it won't, but I mean, it's super ugly right now.
It's extremely ugly. And that, you know, a lot of this comes from, I mean, the fact that none of the Democrats voted for the farm bill is actually kind of a big deal, you know, especially considering what we were just talking about.
Yep.
They have always voted. There's always been a group that voted for the farm bill. And it was always surprising because many of the Democrats, and this goes back to the 70s, when the whole thing was first set up this way, the idea was is that they would put the food stamps and, you know, the SNAP program and the school lunch programs into the farm bill, because that would induce people from the cities and places where, you know, that didn't have a perfect, you know, a personal interest in giving farmers subsidies, that they would vote for it. And this was a bipartisan understanding, and Democrats have always done that, right? Well, this time, and this is under Trump, they decided we don't care about, you know, to hell with you people in the cities. You're not one of us. You're not real Americans, so we don't care anymore. And they decided to put in these draconian, you know, work requirements and various other cuts to programs that mattered to Democrats. And as a result, the Democrats actually hung tough, and that's including people like Colin Peterson, you know, the most right-wing
right.
Democrat in the Congress. He actually didn't vote for it, and that's a first. He's always been one who voted for the farm bill. And ended up, you know, with making it into one of those votes that had to get every Republican, thus giving the House Freedom Caucus more power, which is what that little, you know, cadre of miscreants, you know, is all about, is doing their own little thing. Now, this has worked to Democrats' advantage in the past. You remember back during the Obama administration, they were the ones who tanked the horrifying deals that Obama was making.
Cuts to Social Security.
On Social Security. Right. And so, you know, thanks to the Freedom Caucus being unwilling to take yes for an answer, those things did not happen. And so that same dynamic is kind of at play here. But, of course, it's completely different when you've got what they're actually holding out for here. They're pretending they care about spending, which, you know, obviously that's a lie. But what they really are holding out for, I think, is this immigration bill. That's their end game. I could be wrong. Maybe there's more to it. But I suspect that that's what it is. And that's where Ryan is going to come in and do, you know, the final coup de grace before he leaves office, and try and pass a very, very, very bad immigration bill. And there's a whole dynamic going on around that too, because you had this discharge petition for the DACA, you know, with Republicans participating. So very interesting dynamic going on there. But it does show that what's happening under Trump, and it's happening with this new abortion ruling as well, that, you know, throughout the last, you know, three or four decades, Republicans have talked tough to their base, saying, we're going to end abortion. We're going to put these lazy people on food stamps to work. They were going to do all these things. But of course, when the chips were down and they got in there, they're going, maybe we can't really go that far. We're just, you know, a lot of it was just talk, right? Under Trump, they understand that he's too dumb to understand what the actual, and too dumb and too craven to care what the actual result of that will be for his own voters and for Republican voters, by the
right.
way. I mean, you know, it's not just Democrats who benefit from these programs. And so, you know, there was this sort of, you know, there was this game that was played, a little kabuki dance for many, many decades on what they believed versus what they could do, and they all danced around it and blamed the Democrats and what have you. Well, Trump will sign it all. He'll sign the bills. He'll do it. He wants to do it. He wants to deliver for those people. And so now they're kind of caught in this bind, and they're having to, you know, they're in these situations like with the farm bill. Or do we really want to pass this thing? Or, you know,
but isn't
what are we actually going
to
do?
That, to me, is a problem that is bigger than Trump, because the Republicans now, I mean, they have that warm, you know, the hand with a pulse that has a, you know, a pen in it, essentially. the part of the problem is that the critical mass in the Republican Party is such that these bills can actually pass the House and the Senate. And the fact that they have someone there who can sign it is also problematic. It's, you know, at least one third of the problem for them. So they're in their put up or shut up, you know, moment. But I also think a lot of these people, frankly, who are in office now as Republicans are the next generation, right? The yeah. The old generation was, we're going to pretend like we're going to do this crazy stuff so that we've appeased our crazies. And this generation are the crazies. They are the ones who talk radio,
Fox News Republicans.
Exactly. And that's what Donald Trump is, right? I mean, Donald mm-hmm. Trump is just simply, you know, more or less like the average Republican voter. I think, you know, ingesting only right wing media and believing it and mm-hmm. then regurgitating it, essentially.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they're a product of this, you know, long term strategy on the right, led by, you know, big money people like Rupert Murdoch and the Koch brothers and all the rest of these people who created this monster. You know, for their advantage. And again, going back to our earlier conversation, one of the things that Jeff Hauser says in his article, which is at Rewire, if people want to read it, it's really good, that, you know, you talk about the fact that, you know, Donald Trump, the hated leader, and the Republicans, they're doing all this for their own benefit, their own economic benefit, right? I mean, they're selling out the country in every way, including in things like the farm bill, the tax bill, across the board, to line their own pockets. I mean, that's a compelling message, right? I mean, these are people who are doing this. They're taking advantage of everybody in order to make themselves richer. And in this day and age, in this, you know, with Trump talking about draining the swamp and crooked Hillary and all that stuff, that is out there in the ether. And they're actually doing it. And there's no reason that anybody shouldn't be talking about that, because that is what's happening.
And the reality is, it's the only way that anybody's going to hear you in this.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the bottom line.
Whether you like it or not.
Whether you like it or not.
That is.
You go to war with the media you have, I guess.
Exactly. And the way that people are hearing things. I mean, let's be fair. It's not just the media pushing, you know, Donald Trump is bad stories. It's, well, number one, Donald Trump is bad, so that is a big story. But the other is that this is how, you know, people are hearing this stuff because of the fact of his existence. I mean, he is just someone who is so shockingly unfit and inappropriate that, it, you know, it's that train wreck thing, right? You can't take your eyes off him, even if you want to. You can't. It's just there. The carnage is all around you. You have to see it. And so, you know, politicians have to deal with that reality. That's where we are. And a good politician should be able to parlay that into their own benefit. And I think the Republicans, weirdly, you know, they probably are. They're making it work for them. They're just creating an alternate universe. And, you know, an alternate universe where Donald Trump is the most accomplished president the country's ever had, and he's on the verge of winning the Nobel Prize. And that's what those people believe. So, you know, Democrats are just standing around, you know, looking around going, gee, I don't know what to do. I mean, you know, they want to put people to... I mean, how can you not be able to... you know, take advantage of the fact that Trump is tweeting that about these work requirements. I mean, this is a guy who's, you know, he's allegedly a billionaire, and he's out there telling people, you know, yeah, you're hungry, well, go work for it, asshole. You know, I mean, that's, come on.
it really, I mean, hopefully we'll see some type of, I don't know, some type of shift, but I worry. I think that just Chuck Schumer just seems to...
I'm counting on the locals, I got to tell you.
Right.
I'm hoping that on a local level that people are reading their own people. They know what they're, you know, how to, they just have an instinctive ability to be able to talk to their own voters. And they've been very successful so far in the you know, the special elections, and now coming up in the primaries. So that's all we've got. The national politicians, forget it. They're just, you know, they're doing their own thing. Cable news will take care of Russia and the corruption. Hopefully the local politicians in their own races are able to, you know,
tie it in.
Tie all this into their local issues, into their local people, and somehow it will work out. But that's where I'm at. I don't have any hope that Chuck Schumer or Pelosi either, which is kind of disappointing, are going to be able to lead this in a lead the blue wave. You know what I mean? The wave is going to have to come up from the bottom all by itself.
Heather Parton Digby from the blog Hullabaloo and Salon.com, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. Nice talking to you.
All right, folks. We're going to take a brief musical interlude, and I'm going to call Larry Murphy on the phone and get him on the program. Larry, of course, was Assy in Assy McGee, and had some other roles. I don't know. We'll ask him about it. I'm not 100% sure. All right, folks. Quick break. We'll be right back with Larry Murphy. We are back, ladies and gentlemen, Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Ladies and gentlemen, it is always a pleasure to welcome to this program. I think we've only done it once or twice before, but in those both those times was an immense pleasure for me.
It's my pleasure, Sam. My pleasure.
You just jumped my intro of you.
What? Is it coming?
Ladies and gentlemen, Larry Murphy, you may know Larry Murphy as the actor from Abington, Massachusetts.
Oh,
or perhaps maybe you know Larry in his role as Assy from Assy McGee, or Lenny on Difficult People. Perhaps maybe you know him as Jay in Delocated, or Detective Murphy from John Benjamin Has a Van. And of course, he is Edith on Bob's Burgers, playing aside me in my portrayal as Harold. And he's also Teddy. He's also Teddy. Now, I got to tell you.
You just blew my mind.
Jamie, did you not, is this the first time you've been here with Larry on the pro, on calling in?
It is.
Hello, Jamie.
Jamie is
hello.
Very, very excited about Teddy. Apparently, she's a huge.
Wait, we did this before, didn't we? We did.
Did we?
Was that with Kelly?
I think so.
Are you confusing me with somebody else?
Maybe not. Maybe not. That's a long time ago.
We did this before.
I feel like we talked about.
Yeah, I've been working here like 6 months.
Has it been 6 months since you've been on?
I think so.
We've done this exercise before.
Well, Larry.
Well, it's a real pleasure to talk to Jamie. It's a real pleasure to be on Majority Report. I can't wait to talk about politics.
I would remember that if you did it before, because it's delightful.
There you go. You've made Jamie's day. That's her ringtone now. Now, Larry, I want you, before we get into some of the national goings on, you live in the, not quite the heart of the Commonwealth. Not the heart.
I don't live in the heart of Massachusetts, but I do live outside of the Boston area. Let's call it the Boston area. You would hear it during a no school cancellations.
Right.
In Massachusetts.
A Boston metro area, not the heart.
That's
the
right.
Heart, of course, would be Worcester.
That's considered the heart of Massachusetts.
The Commonwealth.
I remember that. I remember in the 70s when they had that campaign that the spirit of Massachusetts is the spirit of Worcester.
Well, actually,
they had to redirect people back to Boston because everyone was flocking to Worcester. Isn't that what was happening?
It was tough for a while. A lot of people adopted the Worcester Municipal Airport as their primary airport, except for it only operated.
People wanted to fly into Worcester Municipal Airport instead of Logan?
Yeah. But the problem was, it turns out that the Worcester Municipal Airport is only open one out of every 14 days because of the fog.
And then you got clogged bus stations in Worcester.
Right.
People in Worcester can't get around.
That's spirit right. of Massachusetts.
Worcester Polytech students can't get around.
WPI, one of the top Polytech colleges in the country. But Larry, what's it, you know, when I spoke to you before, I think on this program, but I mean, maybe just, you and I have talked on occasion outside of the context of this program.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that, you are in the heart of, sort of like, you're in like Scott Brown territory about.
Well,
sort of around,
I feel like I'm in Big Truck territory, Big Truck, maybe a Trump sticker. You know, no hard feelings, you know what I mean? Like, no one wants him in there. But I think he's doing a pretty good job. I mean, I don't read the news or nothing, but, you know.
How many times a week do you have that conversation with somebody?
What's that?
How many times?
No, I try to avoid that conversation. I just feel, no, you can feel the.
I feel like with Obama, there was a double standard, and like he's doing like things that Obama did, but now it's a problem. And like, I don't hate Obama or whatnot, but I just feel like we need to come together as a country and, like, maybe you shouldn't come here illegally.
No, that's exactly what I've been saying the whole time, Michael, that we want to have some unity. I mean, come on. We're all Americans, right? That's an undeniable fact.
You know, Les?
No, that's a true fact. Not to mention that Massachusetts is one of the original colonies.
That's true. It is. It's one of the original colonies.
Sure.
That's right.
Last week, I did I-24 with this dude who does a show called Long Island Talk.
You have to be explicit about I-24.
Whatever.
You can't say I-24 like
it's a,
Larry. Larry,
I-24.
How many times a week would you say that you watch I-24?
Regularly.
What is I-24?
Exactly. Oh, yeah, Michael said, last week I did a hit on I-24.
Doesn't matter.
Yeah, last
it's
week.
It's irrelevant to the story.
Help me out.
It's a cable, what is it? It's Israeli-French cable station.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, is it TV or radio?
TV.
No,
okay.
No, my TV.
Thank you, Larry.
Permanently burned on the TV. Permanently burned on the TV screen.
No, but the guy I was debating does a show called Long Island Talks Trump, and he was defending torture, and he's like, this is the problem with you guys, you always spin, you always lie, and blah, blah, blah. And then we walked out together to get our cars, and he's just like, you know, it's great, I've seen you on YouTube, it's good, and the important thing is that we're both Americans.
Why? When you walked out, he wanted to tell you that.
After the
you were able to put aside your politics.
During the show, and during the show, he's like, all you do is spin. My buddy died on 9/11. Like 5 minutes later, you know what it is? We're Americans.
Wait a second, you can't do that.
No, he did.
Of course, of course.
Yeah, it was great. It was awesome.
Of course.
I actually want to have him on the show.
So now. Is it the case, I mean, maybe you don't feel comfortable talking about this, but
about what?
Your neighbor.
About what?
Your neighbor. Isn't your neighbor, when you look around your neighborhood, let's keep it general. When you look around your neighborhood, how alienated do you feel
that? I believe that I'm a veteran and there are other veterans in the area.
Okay.
You know?
I understand what you're saying. So you don't want to go down to the VFW and all of a sudden lose your place where you're allowed to drink.
Well, I don't want to go down to the VFW, sit down there, have 30 Bud Lights, and then we are all watching cable together. I don't think that would be.
How often does that happen?
I've never been there. I don't know.
Oh,
never
come on, Larry. All right. Oh, you're not
what?
Supposed to tell? I'm sorry.
Come on.
All right, let's drop the story. We'll drop that. Message received. We shouldn't be talking about that.
I don't care if Larry has gay friends. I just feel like you shouldn't smear our president at the hall.
All right, Larry.
No, but seriously, can we rent this Elks Club? We're going to have a gay wedding.
Talks with that Jew on YouTube.
That's not gonna happen.
All right, so Larry, I want to play you a clip now because I know that you come from a family with a lot of police officers who are represented, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you're part of the thin blue line.
Most are retired now, but yeah, I grew up in a
and of course,
a lot of cops.
And of course. You know, Rudy Giuliani associated quite a bit with Bratton back in his day, right?
That's another, true. Yep.
Another Boston guy, cop. And here's Rudy Giuliani. He was on Chris Cuomo. And I have a maxim. I mean, look, God bless Chris Cuomo. Just, I don't know why, but just God bless Chris Cuomo. I just feel like I should say that. I should preface it by saying... When Chris Cuomo completely dunks on you, I think you have started from a position of weakness, I would have to say.
Why, do you think it's like being dunked on by Teddy?
I mean, on some level. Here is Chris Cuomo, who just basically like, I mean, it's almost like sometimes you see in New York City video cam footage, like overhead, you know, security camera footage. Of like somebody beating up an old man or an old woman at an ATM. This sort of has that same feel.
This is the footage from last night.
It was this last night, or this is from this morning? What's that?
Oh, is that? That's not from this morning, is it?
Yeah, this is from this morning.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep. Well, listen to this. Okay.
You got to comply. You got to go.
He can't.
I should say, Giuliani and Cuomo are talking about whether or not a president has to respond to a subpoena.
You got to comply. You got to go.
He can't. I never heard of a subpoena for the president's person.
Well, you said exactly that.
No.
And you went on to say.
Chris, let's distinguish between a subpoena for documents, subpoena that takes the president out of the Oval Office and puts him in front of a grand jury or hearing. Can't do it. Can't do it the second. You can do the first.
Well, you never did that distinction before.
Well, it never occurred to me they would try to subpoena the president.
That's exactly what was going on in 1998. But people are going to say I'm making this up.
And they lifted.
Here's Charlie Rose with you in the interview, and then you tell me what you meant.
Oh, come on.
What, you don't want to hear it?
Not even relevant.
If the president is asked to testify, subpoenaed.
That's really unfair. What you're doing right now is extremely unfair.
I'm giving you a chance to
explain it. The reason people don't come on the show
with
all that promoting of Avenatti, the ambulance.
All right, pause it for 1 second because there's a lot of over talking going on here.
No, they turned down his audio on that.
Well, but go back. Let's go back. You can hear in the background, Larry, Charlie Rose saying, "If you are subpoenaing a president to go and talk," and you can hear, even though Giuliani's back to the camera, him saying, "Yeah, you gotta go." Meanwhile, you also hear in real time in 2018, Giuliani going like, "How could you do this? How could you play this footage over, trying to talk over?" Let's watch.
He's trying to talk over himself.
Not fair. That's not fair.
Listen to
him. That's not fair.
That's exactly what was going on in 1998. But people are going to say I'm making this up.
And they lift it.
Here's Charlie Rose with you in the interview, and you tell me what you meant.
Oh, come on.
What, you don't want to hear
it? It's not even relevant.
If the president is asked to testify, subpoenaed,
That's
who
really unfair. What you're doing right
jury.
Now is extremely
no,
unfair.
I'm giving
the
you a chance.
The reason people don't come on the show
is
not going
to
do it.
With all that, that promoting of Avenatti, the sure. ambulance.
What happens if Robert Mueller?
What does that have to do with this?
President?
Because they're all trying to bring Trump into that, and he's not involved in it, Chris.
Look, Avenatti has been getting fed information that has wound up being more true than not, mostly about Michael Cohen, okay? What he's doing on TV, that's his business and the people who put him on. I'm talking to you about this, and it matters. And I play that piece of sound. It's not my decision who comes on and not on all the time. With people like you, where I chase you around and I ask you very much to come on because I think it matters, that's my call. But he's not my concern, and you know that. What is my concern is, I played that piece of sound because I want to give you the benefit to give answers in context. Because otherwise, people just beat you
Chris,
over the head with it.
Play it, and it's very explainable.
Well, I did play it. They heard it.
I am talking about a subpoena for documents, which doesn't take you out of your office, rather than a subpoena for your person, which I never contemplated.
Charlie Rose literally says where he has to go and testify in front of a grand jury, and he says, you got to go.
No choice. Go.
That's exactly what they were asking Clinton to do.
Yes, but
sit
was,
down and answer
Clinton
questions
was
about
opposing
this.
It.
Right, but he eventually wound up sitting, and you say that legally that's because he had to.
If you give me a subpoena, and we negotiate terms, and you withdraw the subpoena, I have not complied with the subpoena. The subpoena is now dead.
But you wind up in the same place, effectively, which is answering questions under oath.
Listen to what his argument is. He's saying, if you issue a subpoena, and we negotiate that I can sit down without the subpoena, and so I say, I don't need the subpoena, then the subpoena is not operative. But prior to that, he said, you gotta answer a subpoena. That's why Clinton ended up going, because otherwise we're going to have a subpoena and we're not even going to have any terms that under which we can go.
Right.
Larry, as Teddy on Bob's Burgers, do you
maybe,
think this position is tenable?
Remember
what was it?
Do you think this position of the Trump administration is tenable? Based on your experience as Teddy on Bob's Burgers, do you think that he's going to be able to deny it, avoid the subpoena?
I'm going to answer that. I'll answer that as Giuliani.
Go ahead, please.
First off, Sam, can we agree that all is fair in love and war and elections for national office agreed?
Sure, we can agree to that.
Right? And Cohen's secrets is on the table? And funneling money, if the president does that, that's not illegal.
No, well, it is illegal.
That you say. But there's never been a precedent where that's been made illegal.
Well, I don't think we've ever had something so blatant by a president before.
Listen, Sam, Trump would testify if he didn't have to tell the truth. Right?
That's going to be one of the terms.
John Gillinger, Ted Kaczynski, Charles Manson, none of these people would be in jail if they hadn't committed crimes.
That's
agreed.
Yeah.
Is it Mr. Mayor?
I agree. Wait, yes. I
now
agree.
We're agreeing on things.
Mr. Mayor, part of the reason you said that to Charlie Rose, were you taking what Toni Morrison said seriously about Bill Clinton being the first black president? Did that influence your opinion at the time?
I don't want to be put on this, but that's not fair. That's not fair to say that to me. That's not fair, Michael. That's not fair. I'm America's mayor, and I'm America's mayor.
Does this involve 9/11 in some respects, would you say? Were we dishonoring that memory?
Believe me, there's stuff. This is where I allude to the idea that there's bigger things that you don't know about that are going on. Believe me, Michael, there are questions that you don't want to ask. Those questions you keep asking, you think you want the answers to these, but you don't.
Wait a second. Are you suggesting that there's... What kind of information are you talking about?
It's above top secret.
But why would you have access to top secret information?
Because I got some buddies on the FBI. They feed, they funnel information to me.
Hey, let me ask you this, Larry. I want to go back to Larry Murphy a little bit because I have a feeling that you're quite familiar with the Whitey Bulger from back in the day.
Yeah. Yes.
He was treated very unfairly.
I am.
All he was trying to do was take care of his community, keep the drugs out. And they hated him for it.
And he gave out turkeys, too. It was unbelievable.
And they hated him for it. All he wanted to do was make a little money, raise himself up from the old colony projects, and pull together a community. They hated him. Like me.
Do you know this story of, you know who Felix Sater is, right?
I do, yeah.
I'm convinced that Felix Sater is sort of the New York FBI's Whitey Bulger. And in fact, this is just pure speculation, but you and I, we spend a lot of time texting back and forth. Really, you texting me.
Never receiving any response, right?
Well, no, I respond, but I cannot keep up with the pace in which you can send texts to me. But with pure speculation, there is a did you read that crossfire hurricane piece in the New York Times yesterday? I think it was yesterday. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Vaguely. What's the connection to Sater?
They're talking about, there was a primary source who spoke both with Carter Page and with George Papadopoulos, right?
Oh, you're saying that this is the person that they want to unmask.
And the person they want to unmask, who is a person who has been both an FBI and a CIA.
You think he's a Whitey Bulger, huh? Playing both sides of the...
Oh, without a doubt. He is a...
Well,
it is a known fact that he's a CIA...
You read those stories going back on him, right?
On Sater, definitely.
With a margarita glass.
Yeah, he is...
They're leaning on people and... They're both in...
He is both...
What's the real estate company called? Bayrock?
Exactly.
Bayrock, how about a few months back when Trump was very upset about a woman that he said that, do you remember this happened in the Trump Tower, supposed to have happened in the Trump Tower lobby, where Trump basically forced himself on a woman in the lobby?
Do you remember
this story?
No, I don't think so.
How could you do that in the lobby?
Well, first off, what's she doing in the lobby if she doesn't want to be kissed by me? What is she doing in the lobby of my building? Why is she there? That's crazy. Those are elevators, yes, but why are you waiting by them? See, you didn't see that?
And no.
I swear that, well, he reacted, Trump reacted to that story in a crazy way, and it was because, basically, I didn't think he was upset about that. I think he was upset about the fact that mentioned in that was the fact that she said, basically, Trump 24/7 and the majority of the time was up there because he was doing business with Bayrock. And I think he was afraid of that story kind of spinning where people would be like, yeah, how much time did he spend doing real estate with Sater? And what I guess we probably both imagine is money laundering.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know...
But he was upset because they had a photo of that. And that's why he was upset. In other words, there's a photo of her and Bayrock, like back from when she worked there.
Bay what?
And I think it's Bayrock. It is called Bayrock, right?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You tell me.
It's. I was in there sometimes, but, you know, just to say hello to a couple of friends.
I thought what Kevin Weeks did to Whitey Bulger was totally unfair. Totally
I
wrong.
I thought it was very unfair, because you keep your mouth shut and you protect your friends and your family. And if you want to know what's right to do, Michael, you protect your friends and family, don't you? You're a great family man.
But if it's the case that Sater...
There's this story in the book of Whitey Bulger where he shows up at someone's house and he's trying to get them to sell him a liquor store.
Uh-huh.
He comes into their house and then Donald Trump's the guy's child, puts him on his lap and says, "You're going to sell me that liquor store." And then he takes out a gun while the child plays with the gun and he's like, "Come up with a price."
Jeez. Yeah, no, it's actually, yeah.
Yeah. That's a little
it's
bit,
actually, it's a little
it's a family show.
It's called Negotiation.
It's a family show.
But if it's the case that there was, and they describe this guy as a CIA and FBI asset, which is exactly how Felix Sater both describes himself and has been described in documents by Loretta Lynch, I think, when she had an affidavit for a court case of his.
Well, that would go pretty far to say why he hasn't been interviewed about anything, too.
Yeah.
I mean, we haven't heard anything about him being interviewed, and he wouldn't. He wouldn't be brought into the fray on anything. He was never sat down in front of any...
As far as we know, right? I mean, it's conceivable he could be invest. You know, he's been interviewed by Mueller. It's very possible, but we wouldn't necessarily know that.
You suspect he's a high level asset in the.
Well, that's not speculation on my part. That is public record. You can see Loretta Lynch essentially testifying to that in a sentencing hearing for him. Or that court case.
Oh, that he had been helpful in some specific case?
Oh, in multiple cases.
No, in general,
really?
That he was an FBI asset, and I think somewhere else it says he's a CIA asset. He certainly claimed that publicly recently, in the past 6 months.
Yeah.
Here's a guy who was special advisor to Donald Trump in 2012, and by special advisor, I mean that's what he had on his business cards, right? And so... if you are an asset who they're using to track arms sales, they're using to track flows of money and whatnot, the idea that you would work for a huge dupe who is, has a bunch of real estate in New York and has absolutely no scruples and no intelligence to figure out what you're doing.
Check,
Donald Trump
check,
would be like perfect.
Check.
The vessel, right?
Check.
And
yeah.
Trump probably also got used to being able to get away with stuff.
Could you imagine they're like facilitating like an illegal, like an arms deal through Uzbekistan? And he comes in, he's just like, guys, I just found out that HPV is an HIV.
Exactly. I mean, honestly, that's what's going on.
Hey, what was that about? Hey, what was the phone call about? I just found out that HIV and HPV are not.
They go like,
boy, close call.
Donald, what the hell is going on? Did the Uzbekis find out? No, what?
It was my doctor. He just found out that they're not the same thing.
Totally. Now I have a lot of questions for Melania. Why has she not been peeing on me? Excuse God.
And then it turns out that the FBI is like, we've heard from some ambassador from, one of the top ambassadors from Australia, that some of the people on the Trump campaign are talking about, some type of relationship with Russia. Go talk to them, and Sater's like, sure, I'll do it. I mean,
Wait, at what point is that supposed to have happened?
Well, according to Crossfire Hurricane, this Crossfire Hurricane story, this is the guy that Nunes says is
So this is the person they're trying. Geez, again, it's a little bit of a Nunes thing where if you open it up, it just blows up in your face because these are names that haven't been bandied about since the beginning when people were like, Trump's corrupt, and then they mentioned someone like a Sater.
Yep.
They mentioned that he went to jail for carving up someone's neck with a margarita glass and what a bad guy he is. But no one has said his name recently. And so, I mean, that doesn't help them if that comes out.
No, I think it just...
And it also doesn't work as the idea that there's a spy, which Giuliani, when he was pressed on that, was like, there's no spy. We don't know that there's a... We don't know. Maybe.
It really is incredible.
But do you know what the thing that seems to be the biggest thing I see that's lost in all of this is, even if you want to say that there was a spy, at the time when he takes the nomination, Paul Manafort is under investigation by, I think it's 4 or 5 federal agencies on that night.
For multiple years, right?
Yes, I mean, since 2014 at least, and most of it's fiduciary crimes, I think, but they're not under the same umbrella. It's different federal units that he's already under investigation, and it's not a secret. It's known. So I don't know what – I mean, like, he chose him. Do you remember when he wanted to give him a role in the White House?
Yeah, well
– Manafort. He wanted to give Paul Manafort a role in the White House.
I think I've forgotten that already.
And it was basically like everyone just collectively shook their head, like, no, that's not –
He knows a lot of stuff, though.
But he's a smart guy. You got to sit in a room with him. You know what I mean? He also knows most of the best restaurants.
The best restaurants. He also owns a couple of – buildings that he doesn't take proper care of in Brooklyn, so smart guy.
Yeah, he knows some places. And he also used to work for a casino operation in Trump Tower that I had. Brought a lot of good people in there. Russian people. Money people.
Wait, I thought SARS was HIV.
All right, so, Larry, hold on for 1 second, all right? Because let's just turn for a moment, because we've got to wrap this up in a moment. But let's dig in a little bit into what's going on with Bob's Burgers. I mean, aside from, well, we don't even have to talk about the real problems that the show is having in terms of how many people are complaining about the lack of Hugo. I think everybody knows that, right?
I know. I've heard about. I've heard some things like what they keep talking about, like the replacement and who's going to replace this guy and who are they going to bring in?
There's a, look,
to replace this character.
Everybody knows the big story is there's not enough Hugo on Bob's Burgers. Everybody knows that. Okay.
Well, who? I mean, it was first off, it was trending on Twitter.
But
right?
Yeah, it was trending. It's
recently?
Been big. It's a big story. Yeah. A lot of people are talking about
story.
It. It's going to be really big soon. And I think, obviously, the show could save itself a lot of hassle by being a little bit, by getting out ahead of this and getting a little
you
more.
Were in there. You were in there a few times this season, though. Hugo was. Hugo.
Now, is the season over? What season is it? What's going on with the show and what's going on with the movie? Tell us.
Well, we're in season 9, and the movie comes out in 2020, and we recently got picked up for maybe 30 more episodes.
What? 30 more episodes? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
so
what's
I think that would be a season and a half.
And what's happening with the movie?
I only know a date on the movie. I don't really know anything.
Let's hear it.
As far as the movie goes. What's that?
Let's hear it.
2020. July 2020.
And have you started production on that?
I don't know anything about the production.
All right. Well, that's a good sign. That means that I could still be in the movie.
No,
possibility. I mean, that's true. You could be in the movie unless I specify in my contract that you can't. Or I have my lawyer try to. I don't know if my lawyer can do that, but I can try.
Does your lawyer still take your calls, honestly?
You absolutely need to be included in the movie. That's not going to happen without. The movie won't happen without you. I think that probably everyone will band together and make sure that it would never happen without you.
Well, I am definitely holding you to that, Larry. And happening. Now that you've said it on air, it's
happening without you, the Sam Cedar Entertainment story.
I mean, I'm here with the guys from the studio right now, and everyone's like, yeah, no, it definitely won't happen without him. I'm here with the movie studio
Wait,
guys.
Wait, you're hanging out with the movie studio guys right now?
I'm in Los Angeles. I'm in one of the studios.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Sure. They'll hang out here.
All right. Well, if you say so. Larry Murphy, always a pleasure, bud.
Always a pleasure for me.
Thank you. Thank you for doing it.
Thanks, Sam.
Bye-bye.
Have a great weekend.
Ladies and gentlemen, Larry Murphy, the great Larry Murphy, star of animated shows. All right, folks. Oh, wait, do we have a Jimmy Roofer Cake song?
We do.
Hey, folks, just a reminder, this show exists because of its members. We can't do it without you. And for just a couple of bucks a week, you get 5 days of programming. And as a way of saying thank you for supporting this show, we give you even more content. We basically give you 10 shows a week. You don't have to listen to all of them. But they're there. It's nice to know that they're there. You know, when you go to the beach, maybe you need 8 hours worth of podcasts one day. Guess what? You got it. JoinTheMajorityReport.com. JoinTheMajorityReport.com is the place where you can join. All right, well, let's just hear the Jimmy Reef Cake song. What song is it?
I'm the President.
I'm the President.
Really hoping that
now,
there's some Ivanka material.
Last week we heard it was a Jim Morrison, like a Doors, right? It was very controversial the way that everybody reacted to the Doors in this office.
might be the most polarizing thing I have ever said on this show.
It was dicey, but do we know what this song is like?
I wasn't able to determine based on the lyrics that he provided in the email. So,
all right, yeah, because we always like to listen to this fresh. We don't want to come to it with any pre.
Totally unprompted.
Totally impromptu.
Oh yeah, I'm Trumpy Morrison, baby. Combine the most infamous rock star of all time with the most infamous politician.
Doors again.
I am, yeah, and I'm the president. Ooh, yeah, I'm the president. Hey, you porn stars, I like the way you scream. I'm out to make it with my midnight dream. I say, hell, cause I'm a backdoor man. The men don't know, but Stormy Daniels understands. All right, I took her from dinner to my hotel bed. Did it with no condom, just like little Stormy said. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Think about it. Let it sink in. I'm the president. Yeah. Ooh. And the men don't know what Bill Clinton understands. Yeah, little Bill, he's the original one. Well, I'm the president. Oh, I'm backdoor man. I said I'm the president, and I'm the backdoor man. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I'm the president. I said the men don't know what them Russian whores understand.
I feel like sometimes Jimmy gets on a jag, and I think I appreciated the Doors last week, but I feel like maybe it's time to, maybe that's been mined.
I mean, Jim Morrison was a womanizing piece of shit with an inflated sense of his own importance, so it kind of works.
Oh,
there you go.
Bop, bop, bop. Bop,
bop, bop. Bop,
bop, bop. No, that was, I feel like, actually... I hate even saying the sentence because it's just so disgusting. But I think that I don't think of everything that has been said about Trump. I've actually not heard the claim that he enjoys that particular form of sex. So that's interesting. I mean, it's both going on a tear, and it's a little. It's not there. It's not on the public record. The Ivanka stuff is certainly there. The Stormy stuff is there. The Russian stuff is there. But I have not. Stormy Daniels' description of their sex encounter sounded like conventional 30 seconds.
I think you may be, I suspect that when Jim Morrison sang about Backdoor Man, it was not a necessarily a reference to an explicit sex act as much as it was that he was involved in an adulterous relationship.
Oh, no, you don't
so get... So he would run out the back door.
You don't get the song at all.
No, I get... No, but I think that's probably it was.
Okay.
The idea being that you are not the...
you're running out the back door. I got it.
Yes.
So that's... I see. So Trump's... But I don't know if Trump's but running I have out a feeling, the back door. I think no, Trump is I cheating think, on his wife.
I think Jimmy Reefercake interpreted more like you did.
yeah, I was going to say. I
think Jimmy Reefercake interpreted it more as like a specific move.
Well, my analysis was of Jimmy's song, to be fair, not the original. I don't even know the original Morrison song.
Oh, frankly. There you go. All right. Well, and ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder. JustCoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off.
Great transition.
And, well, speaking of backdoor men, don't forget, Tuesday nights is the Michael Brooks show. And this week... Bhaskar Sunkara and Allison Hartson, who is running for Senate in California... check out that show either on iTunes. You could sign up. You should probably subscribe anyways. Even if you like to watch it, you should subscribe to the iTunes podcast, which you can find in iTunes. And also you can go to YouTube and sign up or just watch the program at our YouTube page, which is youtube.com/Sam Cedar. And of course, the Antifada dropped an episode this week. You can check out Jamie's co-hosted podcast. It's really like a group podcast. What would you call it?
It's a co-op.
It's a cooperative pod. Is it the first co-op podcast?
I don't know. Good question.
Here's how you know if it is, if you call it that. Because I haven't heard anybody else claim it.
Good idea.
That's called marketing, folks. The first co-op podcast ever. The Antifada at patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Hell yeah. Us commies aren't that great at marketing, so I appreciate it.
There you go.
We took a little field trip this week to the new school, which was being occupied by students, and we actually interviewed one of the student occupiers, and then we gave some background about the university as a site of struggle. So check it out.
Check it out. Like I say, patreon.com/TheAntifada. All right. Quick break. Then we're going to head into the fun